Shri Baburao Vithoba Chavan is a veteran freedom fighter who took a leading role during the Quit India movement of 1942 in organizing underground activities, having taken over charge of explosives. He was responsible for the planning and execution of the bomb explosion incident in Capitol Cinema. He was arrested and imprisoned for 3 years and was released in 1946, after which he gave up politics. Shri Chavan is at present the president of the Freedom Fighters Association in Pune district. Shri Chavan, would you kindly relate how you joined the Quit India movement in 1942 and what were your experiences in respect of the incident known as the Capitol bomb case?
In order to answer your question, I must provide you with the background which led me to plunge myself wholeheartedly in the turmoil. Those were the turbulent days. War clouds were hovering over Europe. Hitler and Mussolini, the great dictators, had evil designs on the neighboring nations. Some political thinkers thought that a clash between the democratic forces and the dictators was inevitable. We Indians were following the developments in Europe as we thought that our men will again be required to fight for our rulers, the British, much against their will. Gandhiji was writing many thought-provoking articles in Harijan, the English weekly edited by him. He had come to a conclusion that it was necessary to launch a mass struggle to free the nation from the British yoke. He thought that a nation in bondage would not be able to stop the onslaught of dictatorship. It was therefore decided to hold a special session of the Indian National Congress at Gwalior Tank Maidan, Bombay, to get the sanction of the All India Congress Committee to launch a massive struggle to drive away the Britishers, since their presence in the country would be an open invitation to the enemies of democracy. Gandhiji, a man of extraordinary prudence, had predicted that the war would be a global war. I was all along present as a spectator during these deliberations at Gwalior Tank Maidan in Bombay. The historic resolution asking the Britishers to quit India and leave Indians to their fate and destiny was passed on the night of 8th August 1942, and during the night the whole might of the police pounced upon the national leaders and arrested them. A flag hoisting ceremony was to be held the next day at the Maidan, and Mrs. Aruna Asapalli was to unfurl the national flag. People had assembled for the ceremony in large numbers, and a tear gas squad was kept in readiness by the authorities. A warning to disperse was broadcast on the loudspeakers, but nobody was in a mood to obey the order. Subsequently, tear gas shells were fired by the police, and many innocent people from the adjoining buildings had to share the miseries of the people who had assembled there. I was one amongst them, and I resolved there and then to do or die for my country, which was the slogan given by our beloved leader Mahatma Gandhi. I then came to Pune and consulted my friends and colleagues in various fields as to our future plan and participation. It was very difficult for me to establish contact with the underground leadership, as one had to win their confidence before doing so. After persistent efforts, I was successful in establishing and winning their confidence. I was very fortunate in having to provide shelter to Sri Sane Guruji, the eminent scholar, writer and a political thinker who has made an unforgettable and lasting impression on me. My association with the movement till then was not detected by the CID. To my utter surprise, on 15th of October 1942, the police swooped on my shorthand and typewriting suit, which I was conducting in Rewarpe, Pune, in partnership with Sri R. R. Padeshi, to arrest me. At the time of the raid, I was with Sri D. S. Kadu, a nationalist from his student days and a classmate of mine. While the CID police were escorting us to the police station, my associates from the Vajrayi Mandal, a local youth organization, pounced upon the police party and overpowered them with the intention of giving us a chance to escape. We then made a dash for liberty and went underground. From then onwards, the uppermost thought in my mind was to make any sacrifice necessary in the fight for freedom, regardless of the safety of my person or my family. The members of the Vajradevi Mandal were in the bad books of the government and they were arrested that very day. Some of them even went underground, since the direction was to do or die, which meant never to court arrest without a deed of valor. I then chalked out a twofold plan for causing obstruction to the war efforts. One was to blow up the tent factories, the furniture workshops, etc., which were producing the material for supply to the army. The other was to burn the records of government offices, district courts, collectorate, etc. With this in mind, I first selected the office of the superintendent of police as my first target. Mr. Hammond, the then DSP, was instrumental in ordering firing on the demonstrations at various places and was responsible for the death of Sri Dabhade, a young lad of 14 years of age, the only son of a poor widow, and two other ladies. These helpless women happened to be peeping through the windows of their residence and were fatally hit by the deflected bullets fired at a close range from the armored tanks which were being paraded in the streets of Pune to scare the people from taking part in anti-British activities. These and other repressive measures adopted by the superintendent of police had called for some desperate action, and we decided to take our revenge on him by adopting measures which were calculated to shake his confidence in the maintenance of law and order in the city. In conformity with the plan, we organized the blowing up of selected tent factories and furniture works in the city and cantonment areas. The attempt, however, proved unsuccessful, as the incendiary material which was supplied to us by the Central Underground Organization was much below standard and ineffective. The Central Underground Organization consisted of the underground leaders such as Achyut Patwardhan, Jayaprakash Narayan, S.M. Joshi and others. Our attempts to destroy the records of the office of the collector, superintendent of police and district court also proved abortive. Though a number of fires were started, only a small portion of the records was destroyed owing to the defective incendiary material. As the plan to blow up and destroy factories and office records proved unsuccessful, we decided to take some drastic steps to create panic among the military personnel. We drew up a plan to place bombs in the Pune's cinema houses, screening English pictures, which were attended by the British officers and other ranks. We also decided to issue notices to the management of the theatres in Pune, advising them to play the national anthem Vande Mataram and to display the Indian tricolor in place of the tune of God Save the King and the Union Jack on the screen at the end of each show forthwith. We had also warned the management of dire consequences if the warning was not heeded to. For the purpose of placing bombs in cinema houses, as mentioned earlier, I made a survey of the two cinema houses in the cantonment area, the West End and Capitol Talkies. I must mention here that a number of hand grenades which were smuggled from the local ammunition factory by our compatriots were lying idle, as these could only be used either by throwing them at a target or by shooting them from a special rifle. The first method of throwing them involved risk to the lives of civilians attending the cinema shows. It was therefore decided to try some other method of using the hand grenades which did not involve the risk of harming the innocent civilians attending the cinema shows. A hand grenade, as is well known, consists of a striker which is securely fitted by means of a split pin, having a ring similar to a key ring. When the grenade is to be thrown and exploded, it is necessary to hold the striker securely and firmly against the body of the grenade. Straighten the split pin, which is split on opposite directions by the front teeth, and thus remove the split pin to which is attached the ring with the left hand. This requires careful practice and a good amount of skill, and many a times it has happened that the thrower himself had met his doom through carelessness in handling the grenade. The use of this method was therefore given up, as it involved the risk of detection and personal safety. I was already carrying an experiment with the material that was smuggled out of the local ammunition factory and had perfected a method of preparing and igniting an incendiary in a given time. The method looked simple, but it required the utmost skill and know-how. I decided to make use of this particular method. This method, although foolproof, needed to be suitably adapted to suit this particular occasion. The method which I perfected required that the incendiary material consisting of potassium chlorate, yellow sulfur and sugar finely sieved should be packed in a cardboard box, allowing some room to accommodate the hand grenade in the center of the box. Then a hole was made in the lid of the box of a size which was sufficient to allow the insertion of a phial of sulfuric acid. Then I proceeded to tie a nevar or a cotton tape around the grenade securely and firmly so as not to dislodge the striker. I had taken extra precaution by removing the fuse or detonator which is at the bottom. After tying the tape around the striker and making certain that it will not be dislodged under any circumstances, I replaced the detonator at the bottom and put the grooved cap in its proper position. I had purposely selected the 24th January 1942 for the action, as I thought that the police, in anticipation of an intensification of underground activities, will tighten their watch on the 26th of January 1942, which used to be observed as an Independence Day throughout the country. Then, accordingly, I had alerted my other five colleagues who were to assist me in executing the plan to be present at a certain place at about 7 p.m. well ahead of the start of the last show. On their arrival, I instructed them how to proceed in carrying out the desired plan, so meticulously drawn up down to the minutest detail. It was not customary to disclose or share the secret amongst too many of our comrades. On the contrary, I used to select men for the job at the nick of time, and once the plan is disclosed to them, it was my practice never to allow them to be out of my sight, and to keep them constantly under my observation. Two separate batches were selected, one for the Capitol cinema and the other for the West End. Each batch consisted of three individuals. Two amongst the trio were instructed to ride ahead on their bicycles. One of the two was to go to the booking office of the cinema house and fetch a ticket for himself, entrusting his bicycle to the other. Later, he was to enter the auditorium and secure a convenient seat for himself in the row exclusively meant for the military personnel. He was instructed to tie a handkerchief to the back of the seat. He was then to come out and join his comrade waiting outside, who in turn would be waiting to receive the package meant to be exploded. I was to set out with another of my comrades, each one of us carrying the package, that is the cardboard box containing the grenades, wrapped in a khaki handkerchief to facilitate easy handling and transfer from one person to the other. The vials of the sulfuric acid were tucked in our breast pockets. Before delivering the packages to the respective batches, I had to substitute the layers of cellophane paper in the place of the cork originally fixed. This I had to do a few seconds before the delivery. Having accomplished this, I and my colleague parted company to deliver the packages to our respective batches. On receiving the packages, the individual who had gained admission in the theater was to carry the package with him inside the auditorium, view the picture for some time, then, as if to buy a pack of cigarettes or something, was to come out, leaving behind the package with the sulfuric acid vial inserted inside the package in an inverted position, so that the minute the vial is inverted, the sulfuric acid starts corroding the layers of the cellophane paper one by one, causing the contents to spill out and come into contact with the incendiary powder. This powder was to cause the tape around the grenade to burn and to release the striker, which in turn was to detonate the grenade. He was then to dash out through the exit and walk over to the spot where his other comrade was to await him with an extra cycle entrusted to him so that both could make a quick getaway. All along, none of us was to speak to anyone, anywhere, and not to make himself conspicuous, but to remain cool and calm, and to move about and behave cautiously and strictly according to instructions given. It is interesting to note that the two comrades, Shri P. S. Sarvi and Shri S. T. Kulkarni, who were to place the bombs in the cinema houses, were of fair complexion, of medium height, and of athletic build, who could be easily mistaken for European military personnel in view of their looks, mannerisms, and mufti, civilian dresses. The other pair, Shri Datta Joshi and Shri Haridimaya, who were keeping the cycles for their respective comrades, were also of fair complexion and were trained in disciplined behavior. Myself and Shri Ram Singh Pardeshi acted as the couriers for delivering the packages to the batches in the two cinema houses. My colleague Shri Pardeshi was employed in the arsenal at Karki, and it was through his help that we could obtain the material required for our use. As it happened, only the bomb placed in the Capitol exploded according to plan. The other somehow did not explode. The explosion at the Capitol caused the death of 3 and injuries to 13 British soldiers. Following the explosion at the Capitol cinema, the police got wild